At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
California soul. California soul. California soul.
I don't know if you saw the news from the Godolphin team yesterday, but Thundersnow is, and you could tell where this was headed, Thundersnow is not going to be able to participate in the Breeders' Cup. And you just, with all the delays and not being involved in the campaign that they were hoping for him. So the word is that Saeed bin Sarour is hoping that they'll let him go on with Thundersnow as soon as he's ready to resume training. And that could be, a campaign that involves the Winter Carnival in Dubai and another go. Why not at the World Cup? So, too bad. Thundersnow certainly wormed his way into a lot of people's hearts and so forth. My man, Johnny D, making me laugh. We'll see Johnny tomorrow at Philly. Well, we're having Hammer texted me, and so I don't know what exactly. He needed, back about 15 minutes ago. He needed a couple of minutes before we could reach him. So maybe what we'll do instead is go in this direction. And yeah, we'll try to flip flop DeRosa for instead. All right, let's try that. Yeah, everybody, the typical 10 o'clock second hour people, they all backed it up and wanted to go in the third hour. Today, for whatever reason, it happens. A couple of pieces I can slip in as well. We'll save that for Hammer. I don't know if you saw this after the discussion we had about last week about the Jockey Club proposing placing caps on the books of mares that stallions could cover. The news came yesterday. Jockey Club has signed on what seems like a very interesting company I did this morning, a little bit of, poking around, and Plus Vital Limited. They're Irish, and they are genome specialists, and they're going to, I guess, on an ongoing basis. It wasn't like they commissioned them for a study or for a certain consulting. They're going to basically stay on with this project and help with research and offer insight on this topic, Dr. Emmeline Hill. And I am certainly looking forward to having a chance to reach out to them and to Dr. Hill, because I, as I said, with those conversations all last week that we were talking, I thought that this is just fascinating. What the effect on the breed and the inbreeding versus outcross and so forth. So this Dr. Hill appears, because I said to Sid last week, I said, do you know of anybody in that arena? And the Jockey Club went out and found somebody. So also on the news front, you may have seen headlines about Massachusetts Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association sending out a press release about a project in Rowley, Mass., which is sort of a kind of a middle of nowhere in Massachusetts. That's a part of the it's a part of the state that nobody really. I don't know how anybody from Rowley, it's up toward. It's just outside of Haverhill and up toward the corner toward Maine and New Hampshire, north of well north of Boston and north of the Cape. But I don't read too much into this proposal. It's very well intentioned, but that thoroughbred, this Massachusetts Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association is really a non, it's really a non-entity. It's really not the negotiating, the authentic, Massachusetts horseman. This is not the. This is not going to go anywhere, essentially. And there's Ed DeRosa standing by. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. I expected to talk to you in about a half an hour, but we'll take you now.
Here I am. Yeah. I appreciate the early bird when I'm at the track. So no sweat here.
Well, we just talked to James, so... usually I break you guys up, but
okay. Double shot.
Couple of the topics that we hit with James too. What was your impression of Dennis's moment, how does he jump in at your?
He impressed. I tried to beat him. Just being honest, I just thought at 2-5 or 3-5, wherever he ended up being, you know, maybe given the gate issues and, you know, mile and a 16th position's important to Churchill, it was worth taking a shot. I was impressed with the professionalism. I still don't think we've seen from him quite the speed, the, like, performance. You know, we're like, wow, this is as fast as we've seen in a while. I haven't seen that from him, but the professionalism in that effort I thought was impressive. I was watching Irad pretty closely, especially on replay, and he just seemed to respond to every cue Irad gave him, including at the end. Irad pretty much, you know, shut down on him, and he was still running. But that was my impression. It's like, man, you know, this is a horse who can handle a ship to the West Coast for the Breeders' Cup, and as we go down the Derby Trail, you know, bigger crowds and fuller fields. So I was left impressed with his mind. Still waiting, though. You know, I think for all the buzz, I think we're saying, okay, when's he going to be really fast? And we haven't seen that yet, but Dale knows he has a rocket ship, so I'll be interested to see how his training leads up to the Breeders' Cup.
And, of course, runner-up, too. We talked yesterday to Eddie Keneally, and Eddie very excited about what Scabbard did in there. And, you know, for horses that were making a transition to two turns, that was what you want to see.
Agreed. And I go back really to his debut, which was at Churchill. He sort of made that chandelier move, which at Churchill can be an absolute just punisher to horses. They look like they're looming up on the outside on the turn, and they just flatten out and hang. The rail can be very kind in those situations. And on debut, he ranged up and then just kept on going and blew by. So that's another horse where, you know, when you look at what he's done as a two-year-old, is as exciting as, you know, the performances themselves. So the Iroquois, very likely to have a say come Breeders' Cup time.
Yeah, I agree. And what'll be fun is to then, you know, get through the West Coast and the East Coast, and also the Woodbine, two-year-old events, and then, you know, then you start shuffling the deck and mixing and matching, and that's when it gets interesting. What, any other observations from the weekend, Woodbine or otherwise?
I mean, I'll say I'm not sure if you saw my tweet with the trainers at Churchill, but the parity there in the barn area, absolutely incredible, which, of course, a testament to the condition book Ben Huffman's put together for these big purses. But we've had 39 races, Steve, with 40 winners because there was a dead heat, and 34 individual trainers have won those 40 races. And through the first 4 days of the meet, no trainer has more than two wins, which I just think is incredible. And you look at some of these names, probably not too foreign to those who follow the Kentucky circuit for years, but it makes handicapping these races exciting, knowing that you can look beyond the obvious names. And that's no slight on them. They're fantastic horsemen, and they're leaders in the barn area for a reason. But, you know, to see, you know, a Tommy Vanberg come in with a layoff horse and win, and others, I'm drawing a blank, but just, you know, names that, you know, are right there with all the other 34 has been a treat. So looking for more of that as the meet winds down.
And I actually, I've got the winner's book. I got the winner's book here, and I had not seen that tweet, but it is intriguing. And you look between the Invaders and, you know, having guys like George Perabin and Peter Miller win, and you know, guys like that that are coming in from other parts of the country, Stanley Huff, then you've got the locals, but I mean, virtually everybody you can imagine, Randy Matthews, Chris Hartman, Al Stahl, David Vance, Neil Pessin, Wes Hawley, Red Dog, Gary Hartledge, Mott Romans, you mentioned Van Berg, Randy Morse. Is that two for Randy Morse? No, Randy Matthews and Randy Morse. Jason Barkley, Paulo Lobo getting in the act.
How about that?
I love it. I love Paulo Lobo. And all the way back to Farta Amiga. Steve Hobby. We got to get Hobby in there. I love it. Catman, Greg Catalano. Catman has got one of those horses that he talked about on the show. Was that last week? I think last week, early last week, we had Wayne on, and I I'm pretty sure that I saw one of those Gary and Mary West horses that he hinted. He said he had a bunch of two-year-olds that were going to start to run the last third of the year.
And it's great. He is excited. He's a Gold Room denizen, so get to see him pretty much every live race day. And he has hinted that, you know, not all of them are runners, but, you know, watch out. So we'll definitely be looking for him. And things are a lot more fun when he has a couple good ones in. He trained way back, Dreaming of Anna, one of my personal favorites. So always a soft spot for the conditioners of some of your faves.
Well, let's dive in, Ed, and go wherever you want to start.
Well, I'll start today because I like a bomber. Speaking of, you know, maybe some trainers people aren't familiar with, but Genevieve Londano has won in the fifth race, which is just a 10,000 maiden claimer. Number 10, she wants more. 15-1 on the morning line. This one's dropping in for a little bit, and I'm really intrigued that Miguel Mena stays aboard. He rode this filly at Ellis, and she just, you know, kind of just ran a race. But I noticed the second and third place finishers from that maiden race both came back to win. And there was a race yesterday, Steve, that a bomb won who had exited a maiden race at Belterra, and I really didn't have much, even after the race, positive to find on the horse that, you know, oh, how did this one get by me at 30-1? But out of that Belterra race, I did notice that the second and third place finishers had won. So I'm going to pay attention to maybe some key maiden races for these, you know, younger horses that are dropping in that have faced better horses. Yeah, they run their race, and maybe the drop wakes this one up at 15-1 with Miguel Mena staying aboard. That's number 10 in race 5 at Churchill.
No, that's a very legitimate answer. And you know, there's also the sort of that ongoing phenomenon we see with what's happening in Ohio, where you had the, you know, the trickle down effect from the gaming. You know, horses follow money, and better horses have gotten into the horse population. And you're seeing, in fact, at places like Laurel and Charlestown this weekend, in particular, I saw more and more horses that, you know, last raced at Thistledown. And I would be very aware of these kinds of, and you know, we've discussed this as well in our conversations with Dick Powell about Presque Isle, and you know, places that horse players mentally may have a certain, there may be a certain fog of negativity and sort of an impression, an ongoing impression. We get this in New York, Ed, where Finger Lakes horses come to Saratoga or downstate, and you instantly think, well, it's from Finger Lakes. It can't be, it's got to be inferior. Tread very lightly on that.
Yeah.
Because better and better horses are running in Ohio, and then they're going to do well in Ohio. And in fact, that Altissimo is exporting out of Ohio bred company for the most part. Actually, beat Open Company last time, and Altissimo, a horse you know that this weekend is showing up in mixed company, and could be very much a player. So don't let old tropes and old thinking about circuits, in, you know, basically cloud your judgment.
Agreed. And, you know, I think somewhat the secret's out, at least, you know, among people I talk to, who seem to bring it up every year. But, you know, Presque Isle especially, those horses who ship into Keeneland are not to be discounted. And we know that, you know, guys like Jonathan Shepherd and Graham Motion and others are not shy about making the trip from Fairhill to Presque Isle, you know, if they're looking for a certain condition or the taffeta, and they come to Keeneland and do well even in the post-Poly track era. And, you know, Belterra is definitely a player for Kentucky players, because we see those horses obviously at Turfway in the winter, but they come in at Keeneland, and we saw Churchill yesterday. And, you know, the main track there for Ohio, I would say you know, Thistle probably has the better main track horses day to day, but Belterra is your only turf option in Ohio. And, you know, guys who, you know, maybe want to get a race, and I've even seen Wesley Ward ship some two-year-olds up there. So, yeah, the turf at Belterra, I'm not going to make that mistake again after yesterday.
Good job. Good. That was a good aside. All right. So today, and anything with Miguel Mena, I'm for. The 10 in the fifth. He's the greatest.
He's sharp.
And a big personality. The 10, She Wants More in the fifth today at Churchill for Ed. All right. Let's talk about Saturday's action, and I suppose Philadelphia gets us going.
Yeah, I can start at Parks. I have a Dogwood tab as well, but no problem starting at Parks. The Cotillion, and I'm one of these that sometimes questions, you know, needing a restricted grade one for three-year-olds this late in the year, but all is forgiven when you're able to put a field like this together. I mean, this is, you know, other than, I guess, Dunbar Road, but you're never going to get them all. This is the field you want to sort out this division. And I'm going to go with the Oaks winner, you know, maybe a little bit of a homer play, but it just seems with her draw and this, you know, sort of 8.5 furlong race and with the other obvious speed on the outside, if I rad, you know, rates her appropriately, I think she can run the speed from the outside off her feet and then maybe have enough to keep Guarana at bay. And Guarana made me look foolish in the Acorn, so I'm perfectly prepared for that to happen again. But she will be the favorite, Steve, and, you know, here's a chance where we can, you know, still get 2-3 times the price on a Kentucky Oaks winner who, granted, has not won her last two, but also would be impossible to say she's done anything wrong either. So with the price, I'm gonna stick with the Oaks filly and love the connection. It's easy to root for. Her owner's from Columbus. And just, you know, horse I like to cheer on as well. But I think she fits here at the 8.5.
I like it. All right. What about the Derby?
The Derby, super compelling as well. Unfortunately, obviously, you know, with the big maximum security out, who I would have picked, to be honest. I do think he's the best of this group. But he's out, and now's a chance for someone else to jump up. And I think that jump up could come from Spun to Run. Mr. Money certainly has done nothing wrong, and his ascent has been magnificent to watch. I've been there live for two of his races, but with maximum security out, I think he'll be right there with War of Will, and Improbable is the favorite, and I think now's a chance to jump in on Spun to Run, who Smarty Jones got a 110 Bursonet speed rating, and I have not checked out what he got on some of the more designer figures yet. I'm guessing we were probably a little higher than others on that, but nevertheless, that signals some real talent, and it, we won't get 8-1 because maximum security's out, but it's the...
Deja, did we lose? I think we lost that.
Over the track. Yep.
We lost you there a minute. Lost you there a minute, Ed.
I picked Spun to Run in the Pennsylvania Derby.
Well, that part we got. I didn't get all the rationale. No, but I can certainly understand. What do you make of this pace scenario? What do you expect to happen?
I mean, on the pace ratings that Bursonet puts out, it's conceivable even that Mr. Money could be on the front with, you know, a little further outside of Improbable and War of Will. I just think based on what we've seen and how Brett's trained this horse, they like the target. So I'm really interested in the Cat and Mouse, and we know that Mike Smith's not afraid to take a race to people if he thinks he can. War of Will, certainly, with what we saw in the Preakness figures, to be forwardly placed. So I kind of want to punt and just say I think that's part of what makes this such a compelling race is these horses have shown some professionalism to rate, even though they have the speed to go on with it. So I am eager to see how that plays out.
Now, and you know, yesterday, in an extensive conversation with Steve Haskin, Steve made the logical point about the way Baffert operates in a situation like this, and you know how how likely it would be for Smith to take control and just go and
absolutely.
Because he's going to absolutely, depending on how Parks is playing. I mean, typically the inside is never the place to be, but there have been years on Pennsylvania Derby Day when in fact the inside has been okay. So they'll judge that, and I imagine that they at least go get early position, and we'll see. You know, we saw Smith. Who did he do it with? McKenzie in the in the Whitney. The way in which he gained early position, let horses go on, and then came around. That might be the plan with Improbable, but I think, you know, what Gabe Saez does, I mean, with a horse that just went in 58-1 in that most recent work, and granted, he did it so effortlessly, it just feels like Mr. Money is almost certain to break running. And then it comes down to what Gaffleone does with War of Will. That's the intrigue. And, you know, this is an example, Ed, of a situation where you don't necessarily need 12 horses. You got five major horses here, even without Maximum Security, who would have been six. You've got five horses, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they go come out of the gate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, good on Parks. We've heard a lot of promises from a lot of tracks about the type of horses they could get with expanded money, and in this case, they absolutely, you know, they've lived up to the hype with what they've turned this day into on this part of the calendar. And to your point about, you know, you don't need 12 horses this time of year, you know, for better or worse, you know, who's left, et cetera. I'm not sure I want 12 horses because we get to see Code of Honor in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, which, you know, is getting to be a rare treat, seeing some of these horses take on older on that stage, which is an extremely worthy stage for any horse. So it's good to, you know, spread them out maybe this time of year. Obviously, full fields are desired, you know, more often than not. But in this case, in terms of separating the division, this is what we're left with this year, and to make the next few weeks really exciting.
Well, and this has been a race. I mean, it's not like this race has not had big full fields historically. I mean, it's generally been a bulky size field.
Right.
Bringing this up,
and if,
you know,
I'm being honest, I mean, I was so high on Maximum Security, I kind of understood why, you know, with him pointing to this race, that they didn't, you know, get fillers. And then he came out and whatever. But, I mean, the way Mr. Money and Improbable have been running this summer, you know, I get it.
Well, and this is also the time of year that you go back and you pull up the charts from, you know, from the Triple Crown preps, the big Grade 1 preps, and from the Triple Crown itself, and you begin to also say to yourself, you know, where did some of these horses disappear to? Well, I'll give you a horse. Where's Spinoff? Spinoff won that race at Saratoga and then has been rumored for everything since, and he's nowhere. Where is he?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I mean, there's a whole bunch. I mean, we know about the top end of that chart, but you know, there's quite a few that ended up, you know, on the sidelines. We know where Tax is and so forth, and you know, Tacitus and Code of Honor you just referenced. But I mean, think here. Here's the Derby field. Country House is done for the year. Game Winner now done for the year. You know, Master Fencer went home. Pluske Parfait, Win Win Win, Cutting Humor, By My Standards, Vekoma, Bodie Express, Roadster is, you know, kind of reappearing here and there. Long Range Toddy, Spinoff, Grail. Great Magician's gone on and been fine. He's had a good second half, but you know, there's six Derby horses that, you know, basically have been laid, you know, that are sitting by the side of the road with a spare tire. Yeah.
Well, it's part of the fun of the Gulfstream meet is the reemergence and Santa Anita with the West Coast horses. But yeah, some of these horses, and especially from the prep season that didn't actually make the Derby, kind of, you know, not ready for prime time. And which, speaking of which, Pat, it's been on my mind since you mentioned Stanley Huff, recruiting ready.
Yeah.
Was a horse that I remember watching as a 2-year-old here. That was Classic Empire's coming out party. That was a scintillating effort here, granted against Allowance Company, but the seasons that horse has had, you know, that's one of those you kind of root for to get the big one sooner rather than later.
Deja, who's working the board, she just pitched in with Chocolate Martini on the other side of the ledger, but that's a good question. Where did Chocolate Martini disappear to?
She ran after the Oaks, though, right?
I don't know. I've lost track of her. We'll have there's a question for for Amos. All right, good one, Deja. Deja, was that a phone call or was that because that came out of left field?
Was she in Indiana Oaks?
I don't recall actually. She's. That was Deja. That was her favorite horse from the first half of the year. Good for you. I love
fun.
It.
Speaking of the Indiana Oaks, I do like Street Band in the Cotillion. Obviously picked Serengeti Empress on top, but I think, you know, looking in that 8-1 range, Street Band's the horse to get into the number.
You and James both landing on Street Band.
Yeah, and she's, you know, I think she will be around 8-1, and, you know, that's one of those where, you know, if it's Warana Street Band, can still, you know, maybe get an overlaid price in the exacta.
All right. What else? Any others?
Last one will be the Dogwood here at Churchill. Covetti, obviously, needing no introduction, having beat Serengeti Empress last out. But I'm really intrigued by Ian cutting back Champagne Anyone. I think that's kind of a cagey move for him, and you know, horse who has had some buzz around her, you know, especially coming into the Oaks. So I'm interested in that cutback here.
All right, you know, on number power, she's got to improve, but I get it. She's certainly the other, you know, she's certainly the option.
So, yeah, we'll see what the board says. I actually was surprised to see 4-1 on the morning line. I thought she'd be a little higher off her last few. So we'll let the board dictate.
Well, Ed, I appreciate it. Really a fun weekend. I told James the racing at Churchill has been excellent already, and it continues today, tomorrow, and Sunday, and then into next week. So we'll catch up soon. Good luck this weekend.
All right, same to you and all your listeners. Let's have some fun this weekend.
EJXD2, Ed DeRosa, everybody. Let's take a break here. And we found Hammer, and there was clearly telecommunication mysteries at work. But he's ready to go. Rick Hammerly joins us next. Nick Tamaro and Dave Grenig. Weekend preview continues at the races here on SiriusXM.